Have a question or need how-to advice? Just ask Meta AI. Whether you need to summarize your class notes or want to create a recipe with the ingredients you already have in your fridge, Meta AI has the answers. You can also research topics, explore interests, and so much more. It's the most advanced AI at your fingertips. Expand your world with Meta AI. Now on Instagram, WhatsApp, Facebook, and Messenger.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Welcome to Grid Talk. Today we're here to review the 2024 Australian Grand Prix. My name is Ruby Price, and joining me we have Grid Talk co-host Wayne Medford.
Yeah, hello.
And Monkey Seats, Tom Horrocks.
Hi there.
Before we get into the episode, we must thank our sponsor for this episode, BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for all your betting needs. Get the latest odds, lines, and matchup reports for baseball, boxing, golf, and more. BetOnline continues to be the fastest and easiest way to place your wagers, including live betting and your favorite casino and card games available to play right from your phone. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and get in on the action. Remember to use the promo code BELIEVE, that's BLEAV, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, where the game starts. And for the first time since Australia 2022, Max Verstappen has retired from a Grand Prix, and picking up the pieces of his scattered brake ducks was job seeker Carlos Sainz, still the only non-Red Bull driver to win in 2023 and 2024 so far, with teammate Charles Leclerc coming home in P2 with the fastest lap, and Lando Norris rounding off the podium for McLaren. A late virtual safety car due to a final lap crash from George Russell putting proceedings to a close and widening the gaps at the end for all the drivers who start to pass the capsized Briton. So, Owain, let's start off with Ferrari. Carlos Sainz, the race winner, took an early lead due to Verstappen's brake issue, but it was still a pretty sweet move heading into the fast turn 9 chicane. Due to his appendix surgery from the previous race weekend, he's been unable to prep for the race in the usual way. I'm thinking now, should more teams consider appendix removals for weight saving? Because the data so far suggests it does improve your race pace.
I mean, I don't think there's going to be people electing for it, but you, I can imagine actually a lot of F1 teams are going preventative surgery so that you don't have to have the worry of appendicitis later. Whether or not that's a good idea medically is probably a different matter. But yeah, no, it's been, apparently he's not looked great out of the car. But once he's in the car, science is obviously ever the professional, ever the well put together racing driver. And obviously he's done a bang up job. Obviously they are picking up the pieces, and I do want to sort of caution it. I don't want to take away from the win, but I do want to caution it with the fact that, you know, I wouldn't say that I don't want to get running away with the idea that, you know, Ferrari is back. I mean, obviously they have done a lot of work because they really did control this race in the front, among the backdrop of a sort of quite high tyre deg. I mean, it would be relatively easy to get, you know, undercut or have issues with their cars. I mean, they played it well tactically as well, asking the drivers not to swap around or anything like that. But apart from that, yeah, no, I think it was all right. It was fairly good.
Yes, it was. Tom, I'm going to stick with Ferrari just for now. We did hear race orders being deployed at Ferrari during the middle stint, with them being told to hold station. In a race such as this, where the likely candidate is away from keyboard, did Ferrari make the right decision to enforce a driver order, or would you have preferred to see them allowed to fight?
I think the team has always got to do what's best for the team overall, because it's you've got to look at the team overall. And I see people saying about Carlos Sainz is not going to listen to team orders this year. Of course he is. He's an absolute professional. He's always going to follow the team orders. If it's a fight for a race win in the final stages, then, you know, potentially you could say, well, no, that's not fair. But certainly in the middle of a race, in the middle stint, if there's anything that needs to be done, that you're gonna follow the team action. But this was a great opportunity for Ferrari to show that they can pick up the pieces when Red Bull aren't there, and they absolutely proved it today. I don't really think they made any errors. We saw a couple of clowns in Ferrari outfits in the stands at one point on the stream that I was watching, and yeah, I was thinking, oh, is that the Ferrari strategy team? But turns out no, they did a good job. So no, I've got no complaints at all from Ferrari today. I think they would have been in with the fight for Verstappen. Whether he would have actually been able to beat Verstappen, I'm not entirely certain, but they certainly would have been within that fight. So yeah, I'm very happy overall with Ferrari today.
Yeah, definitely. And I think as well, in the end, Carlos Sainz had pulled a 9-second gap by the time Leclerc boxed for his final set of hards. But at the same time, you know, the two drivers fighting could have put McLaren back into contention. And speaking of McLaren, Owain, first Australian Grand Prix podium in 10 years. Lando Norris joining Kevin Magnussen as the two most recent McLaren podium sitters down under specifically. He lost the place to Leclerc early on, and strategy put him behind his teammate at the first pit stops, but he pulled it back and was clearly quicker than Piastri on race pace, highlighting a very promising start for McLaren that has been missing for this last decade.
Yeah, I think it's funny that last podium for McLaren sort of came at the beginning of, well, not the beginning, it was sort of right at the end of their last period of real competitiveness. I mean, hopefully this is a sign of big things to come, where this is, you know, them sort of back on the ascendancy, and it's just been a long, very winding, troubling road over the last decade. Yeah, it was great. I mean, it was sort of weird that Piastri managed to jump Norris, but I don't think anyone really expected the undercut to be so powerful initially. So I think that, you know, you can at least understand why that happened. But, you know, McLaren did the right thing and you know, swapped their drivers around, and it became very, very clear, as you say, that Norris had the race pace. He had much more race pace than Piastri seemed to, and took off. And in the end, it was something like a 30-second gap between the two. So I think they did the right thing. They've done right by both of their drivers. Not sort of caused any inter-team issues, which, you know, you don't want to be doing just as you're sort of maybe approaching, reaching the front. And most importantly, they didn't throw away the podium at all. You know, they didn't even fall back into Perez, which was, I think, the most important thing. That was, I think, the big threat for them. And they didn't get suckered into it.
Yeah, definitely. And Oscar Piastri missing out on a home Grand Prix podium, which would have gone down a treat with the Aussie crowd for sure. But Sergio Perez ultimately finishing in P5. He'll be ruining the three-place grid penalty he picked up in qualifying for impeding Nico Hülkenberg, as a sixth-place start left him unable to capitalise on his teammates' misfortunes, which, when your whole job description is to pick up the wins that he can't, is rather unfortunate. We did see a brief burst of pace from him early in the middle stint, but once he passed Alonso, it was plateau for Perez rather than the podium.
Yeah, I'm sure that he will blame the three-place grid drop for the lacklustre performance, but looking at the times and looking at the way the race panned out and the way the degradation was, I don't think it would have made a massive difference. I mean, he was boxed in behind Russell at the start, but we saw him in clear air on those tyres later on in the race, and he didn't really have the pace anyway. I think without the three-place grid drop, he would have been around sort of Norris-Piastri level. I think it would have been a Piastri-Perez fight. So he maybe lost one place as a result of it, but it's still not good enough. And I've banged my head against the wall so many times with Perez about this, but he's definitely closer to Verstappen this year. Credit where credit's due. But also, he does tend to start the seasons well. And he was doing this last year, but last year he was winning races, and this year he's, you know, missing out on podiums. So that seat is absolutely his to lose, because nobody is stepping up. It's the seat that no one seems to want. It's the most competitive seat in Formula One, and no one seems to want it, because the people that are in line for it are not really in contention for it. So I can honestly see Carlos Sainz getting back into the Red Bull fold for that seat for next year. I just think that would be the absolute best thing for Red Bull. And Perez, like, I hope that he doesn't just think, well, that seat's mine because Ricciardo's not performing and Tsunoda, they don't want him. Because that would be the absolute worst thing for him, and he would be out. I can see him losing that seat mid-season. I genuinely can. I'm not sure who they would put in, potentially even Liam Lawson, just to see that through for the rest of the year and see where that goes from there. But it's a difficult situation for Red Bull because you've got to have Lawson in one of those cars, surely. But do you put him straight in the Red Bull? I'm not sure. But it's a bit early to be talking about Perez losing his drive, obviously. But still, he's still only about 0.4 of a second away from Max Verstappen. But if we see a race like this when the Ferraris are only a tenth or two off, that is, you know, that's a P5 kind of finish for him. So it's not great. I mean, he's behind Leclerc in the championship in a season when his teammate has retired from a race as well. So it's not great. It's not great. I'm not entirely happy. I mean, he's only 6 points ahead of Sainz, who's missed a race, and he's got the best car. So there we go. not great from Perez at all.
Not great for sure, and certainly no bets being made this early in the season regarding any driver's performance or ability to get to the end of the season. Owen, yes, a driver who benefited from the VSC caused by Hamilton was his old rival Fernando Alonso, who ultimately came home in P6 ahead of his teammate Stroll, who managed P7 in the end. The Spaniard picking up a cheap pit stop, gaining himself 10 seconds of race time, putting him squarely in the fight with the Mercedes of George Russell.
Yeah, you know, to be honest with you, obviously I think Alonso did a fairly well off the start and then went long. And honestly, to be honest with you, I think he got lucky. He got really, really lucky with that VSC. Had he not, he'd be way back down the pack. But, you know, he's finished up sort of 10 seconds further ahead. I think he'd be... looking at the times, just the finish position, did it? I'm not sure that it would have played out entirely this way, but he would have ended up about 3 seconds ahead of his teammate rather than 13. But I think that's he got really lucky with it. They went long, and to be honest with you, it's been a great job from Alonso and Stroll all together in some ways because they've ended up in 6th and 7th out of 9th and 10th on the grid. Yeah, I think the thing is they kept out of trouble and they sort of played things right, because I don't actually remember seeing a lot of them, but they put in quite a solid performance, and they've taken over a good points haul. You know, well, I mean, the best of, I mean, they're sort of fighting with the Mercedes at the bottom end, or at least at the top of the midfield, and they've taken home more points than all of them. So obviously it's a great start, and you want to get those early wins so that, you know, when the stuff starts to hit, you know, when the attritional stuff starts to happen later in the season, you've got that little bit of a buffer, and I think they're doing that quite well, at least in this race.
Yeah, and good point as well about starting off strong, because ultimately that was what put Aston in such a good position towards the end of the season last season, when, you know, towards the middle they dropped off and were struggling to even finish in the points. And this time around, you know, it's their rivals who have struggled, and, you know, they've been there to pick up the pieces. Owen, I'll stick with you just for now. The stewards have been looking into the incident between Alonso and Russell. Do you have any thoughts on what happened and if an investigation is even necessary?
I actually haven't seen too much about this. What incident was this for?
So the argument is that Alonso braked significantly earlier ahead of Russell moments before George Russell crashed. As Tom is very kindly sharing with us some notes, he was 37 kilometers per hour slower than a lap earlier and would normally have been on full throttle at that point. But basically, you know, the implication is that because Alonso was driving abnormally, that's what's put Russell offline and then has ultimately hit a wall.
I mean, it's not, I wouldn't say, you have to be able to prove it's driving dangerously. I remember quite an old, it's very old now, and as far as it's probably so old that it doesn't really matter anymore, bearing in mind the penalties have changed so much, which is a point I will get back to. The car in front is allowed to drive as quickly as it wants. You know, it doesn't really matter how, you know, you can supposedly brake check someone, but I would like to point out that That's been, I think that someone said, well, you know, you braked 100 metres earlier and I ran into the back of you. And I believe that that wasn't penalised in that instance. This is a long time ago and I can't remember the incident. But, you know, it's up to the driver prior, driver behind to get past safely. And the driver in front kind of can, you know, obviously they're not driving dangerously, but I don't think braking significantly ahead, significantly earlier than you have done otherwise, is a, you know, I'd happily be proved wrong, but I don't think it's, you know, something that you can claim. You know, it's not like he brake checked him, looked in his mirrors and was, you know, was hunting around to make sure that he, you know, got Russell. You know, as far as I could tell, it doesn't look right for that based on the replays that I've seen.
Tom, any thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's disgraceful from Alonso, to be honest. It's not the first time we've seen him do this. He will do anything for a position and he doesn't care about other people's safety. I'm absolutely appalled by it. At the time, I thought, oh, that was an unforced error from Russell. But now I've looked at it back and I see just, he's braked in a straight line. And the reason he's done it is to make sure that George was too close on the, I think it was on a DRS activation, so he wouldn't be able to use it as well. He wouldn't be able to get the run up into the corner, so he'd be boxed in behind him and then he could just defend against him rather than him just driving by him. But we've seen Alonso do this before and it's disgraceful and he always gets away with it. And I would cite Saudi Arabia 21 as an example of when this has been penalised, when Verstappen got penalised for it. And I think it absolutely needs to be looked into the same breath. It hasn't led to a collision this time, and it's not Vettel in Baku driving into Hamilton after saying that he brake checked or anything like that. And Russell has dropped it in the end, but you know, Alonso has braked hard in a position where Russell is not going to be expecting him to brake hard at one of the fastest parts of the circuit. He's then had an incredible closing speed, lost all the downforce that he was expecting to have whilst going into that corner, because why would he brake?
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code POD to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code POD at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code POD.
At that point, there's absolutely no reason for it. And then he's lost all the downforce, he's lost control of the car. There is definitely some blame to lie onto Russell there, but if he hadn't have crashed out, it still would have been dangerous driving, and I still think it should have been looked at because that is too far. He's stepped over a line there, and I'm not happy about that at all. So I'm guessing you got my you got the gist of my wanting to come in there by all the notes I was sending in the chat, because yeah, I was going to talk about it in the post show, but yeah, I'm glad you've come to me because that was I'm not happy about that at all, and I think that kind of behaviour just really taints his legacy, and this is what makes him like very much like Schumacher in the way that he will go over the line. But for what, sixth, seventh place in the Grand Prix when you've had a pretty decent race? What's the point? It's just, he's better than that.
Unlike Schumacher, without seven championships to show for the driving. But from potential 5-second penalties to 5-star ratings, if you enjoy this podcast, we'd love it if you could take 5 to leave us a 5-star rating on Spotify or a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. And if you're one of the 72% of people who aren't yet subscribed to the channel, please consider helping us out with a like and a subscribe. And a driver who you know, is no stranger to five-second penalties. We've got the cheap plug out of the way. The Red Bull sister team, VCarb, brought home a couple of points as Yuki Tsunoda came home in P8. Tom, his much more experienced teammate Daniel Ricciardo finished further back in P12 and did have a lap in qualifying deleted, which halted his home race progress. But considering their rivals Haas have also picked up some points, a vital showing of form from the Japanese driver who is leading the team.
Yeah, he absolutely is. And Tsunoda's doing a good job this year. And he did a good job last year, very much underrated. I had him in my top 10 drivers last year for the whole year. I think he's still got some rough edges that need smoothing out. He's needs to look at his temper issues, which we've always known about him. Is he ever going to win a world championship? Probably not. Will he win a race in the right circumstances? Potentially. But, you know, his teammate has won 8 Grand Prix and he just doesn't seem to be up to it. Daniel just seems to be a shell of his former self. I was thinking maybe it's just this era of Formula One that's causing him the problem. Maybe it's just that the ground effect is the issue. But he was bad in 21 as well. Yeah, you know, let's not forget that. I know he won a race in 21, but he was still nowhere near his much younger teammate and still had a lot of, you know, credit in the bank at that time. You know, he'd just come off dominating Nico Hülkenberg in the Renault team and actually forcing Hülkenberg out of F1 effectively. So it, for him to then come into the McLaren team and do so badly was before this era started was definitely surprising. And he just doesn't seem to be up to it at all anymore. I've been such a big defender of him. I really wanted him to do well. And coming back into F1, I wanted it to be just a McLaren specific thing as to why he wasn't able to compete there. But he was blaming the car. He's saying, you know, at the end of the day, he did lose a lap in qualifying, but he lost a lap in qualifying because he went outside the lines. You know, we've said this time and time again. It's black and white, and you've got to stick to it. If you know, the best lap in history can be the best lap in history, but if it's illegal, it's not the best lap in history. So he was blaming the car, saying, "Well, I'm having to work so hard because the car's so bad." And it's just like, well, yeah, but then your much less experienced teammate on the other side of the garage is getting much more out of it. So you haven't got the balance right. That's down to you as a racing driver to find that limit. So yeah, to be honest, good performance from Yuki. He did lose a couple of places. You know, when you look at the people that are ahead of him that retired and he still finished, I think he finished where he started, didn't he, in the end? But points banked definitely for the RB team. So they'll be happy with that. But Daniel really does need to step up and he needs to step up soon.
If it really is such a bad car as well, would you be putting Yuki in the Red Bull seat, the second Red Bull seat at this point? But Daniel Ricciardo obviously under a lot of scrutiny, being the driver brought back to eventually challenge for that second Red Bull seat. Recent performances have left everyone questioning why. But away in double points for Haas. Yes, they inherited the P10 from Russell's DNF, but 2 back-to-back points finishes for Nico Hülkenberg. And a relatively strong race pace from both drivers. Like, is getting rid of Steiner paying off? And can Haas maintain this charge that currently has them 7th place in the Constructors ahead of all of their rivals?
I mean, I'd hesitate to give this credit purely to Steiner, or to his departure more specifically. But I don't know what it is, but it's working. I mean, maybe it's, you know, maybe it's the effect of, you know, sort of change of manager that you, you know, that you often see sometimes in football where, there's a very brief uptick in form right at the start of the new regime. Maybe that's working, you know, but it's not just good luck. I would like to point out, it's not just good luck. Yes, as you say, they inherited the 10th place from Russell, which was obviously useful, you know, but they gained 3 places. Both cars gained 3 places from both Hamilton, Verstappen and Russell. And then if you give them Bottas as well, as Bottas started ahead of Magnussen, but that gets you to 10th. And 12th, respectively. I'm sort of, you know, if you just give them those gimmies, essentially. But that still doesn't get you the 9th and the 10th that both Hülkenberg and Magnussen have achieved. You know, against some relatively stiff competition, you know, the other cars there aren't, you know, I think their stiffest competition there is probably Gasly and Ocon. I mean, they're doing terribly, unfortunately. But otherwise, they took their opportunity to get points against even, you know, a Williams that is relatively fast in a straight line and should sort of suit Albert Park in some ways. I think that, you know, they're also some competition and Albert couldn't really get near. So, you know, I think it's a great performance for Haas. And I I worry that they're going to drop off early later in the season, as they often do. But to be honest with you, I think the most interesting part is the fact that they didn't burn up their tyres, which has been a problem for them in the past, and it looked like it was going to be a problem for them at this track with this tyre selection specifically, given what we saw with other cars. And it wasn't. So I think that's something to take from this weekend, and I hope they can continue it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the one thing we do want to see, obviously, in F1 is just more cars being able to be competitive consistently. And, you know, whilst Haas may have gone about things the wrong way in the past, it's good to see them currently going about things so far in the right direction, which, you know, is at least forwards on track. Tom, only one Williams driver has been involved in an F1 session this weekend at a time after practice one, due to Albon's very costly crash that saw him take Logan Sargeant's chassis. He's finished P11 with three DNFs ahead of him. Could and should Albon have finished higher this weekend?
I think if he'd have had all the sessions available to him and the tub that he's used to, he probably would have finished in the points. But I think the lack of long runs, you know, he was relying on Logan Sargeant's info on the briefing to understand how the long run pace was going to pan out and what it was going to do and how to manage the tyres. And let's be honest, based on Sargeant's input so far in Formula One, I wouldn't be trusting his input on that. I mean, I'm sure it's useful for Alex Albon, but I'm sure Alex Albon's input on that would be much more useful to himself than Logan's. I'm sure it's helpful. It's very, very good. And hats off to Logan Sargeant for being so professional and accepting this. It must have been incredibly difficult for him. But I do think, yes, that Albon should have been, or could have been higher. This could have been points. You know, you already talked about Haas and the double points finish there. That's what Williams should have been doing today, to be honest. But he's dropped it, and he's we know how good Albon is, and he's pushing, and he's made a mistake, and he's caused the issue. But I'm sure he feels terrible about it, and I hope that he's you know, he's sent a big bunch of chocolate, box of chocolates to Logan Sargeant or something to say thank you for the car, because that would have, I mean, if I was him, I would have been embarrassed about that. You do what the team tell you to do, but I would have been embarrassed to be in that position to, you know, if it had been a technical issue or something, then fair enough. But he's dropped it. I've got my own opinions on that, but I think I'll leave them to Owen because I know he's got opinions on that. So, but yeah, it's a missed opportunity for them. I do think that, yeah, we've got Haas have got some points banked, which is great for them. They will be pushing to catch up, and them and Alpine will be scoring points regularly by the end of the season, I think. So that's just going to be another defensive situation, but has to try and hang on to that. But yeah, it's an unfortunate missed opportunity for them. I think they were expecting better this weekend, but plenty more opportunities. I'm sure they'll be there when there's some craziness happening at some point later in the year. So still lots of chances.
Yes, absolutely. And Owain and the people listening at home, I'm going to stick with Williams on this. If you're listening at home, let us know either in the live chat if you're watching along or on the socials at GridTalk UK. But was it the right decision for Williams to take away Sargeant's car when it was Albon who crashed it?
I think so, personally. I mean, I take the point of various people in the F1 paddock who have said that, you know, you have to take your best option of getting points. And undoubtedly, Albon is Williams' best option of getting points. That's what they need to stay on the grid. But, you know, against the backdrop, really, of you know, James Fowles being sort of coming out very publicly and saying this is our sort of series season to break things and, you know, and change everything and, you know, sort of have the worst two seasons of our lives so we can come in 2026. And, you know, does that include Logan Sargeant as part of the plan? You know, do you give him the extra race weekend to help, you know, to help his sort of confidence in the car and his understanding of the car? I think so, yes. I would also like to point out that, you know, it wasn't a technical issue, as Tom says. It was crash damage inflicted by Alex Albon. So unless it's found that, you know, something broke on the car in FP1, that's Albon's fault. And I think, you know, you sort of make your bet on that one. You have to lie in it. Like, you know, I'll put it this way. It's the sort of thing I expect to see from Ferrari. And I don't know, I just didn't expect it from Williams, and particularly James Vowles, but clearly they made that decision and they have to live with it. You know, 11th place is roughly where Albon would be finishing anyway, I believe. But I think, you know, I think that only they can make the decision of, right, was this worth it in the case of, where were we expecting to finish? Where were we expecting Logan to finish? Where were we expecting Albon to finish? Because I think that Albon has to outperform even where they expected him to finish to make this worth it in some ways, or at least achieve it. And I don't know whether they expected him to end up here or in the points, but he's very close to it. And I was hoping he'd get points so they wouldn't rue their decision. But there's a certain amount of giving Logan Sargeant the cold shoulder on this one, swapping his teammate in. Is that worth it for an 11th place? And only they can answer that. I think that's my take on it.
Yeah, and we'll continue. But what was I going to say? Do you think if Logan Sargeant crashed, would he be entitled to Albon's car in the future?
I think this is a better question. Now you're really asking, because if Logan Sargeant, irrespective of this, outside of this, let's say it happened a year ago in a Grand Prix or something like the Grand Prix weekend, and Logan Sargeant crashed, would he be entitled to Albon's car? There's no way in hell. There's no way in hell right now. I don't know if it's a quid pro quo I don't know. Obviously, we're making up the context of the situation at this point, but I don't think they would. Whereas they've clearly it seems like a Red Bull like decision. That's the biggest thing. When the news came out, I immediately brought it back to 14 years ago. Silverstone, where it was a new Sprecher front wing that Red Bull had for both cars, but they only had enough for one each, and Sebastian Vettel's failed during practice, and they essentially said to, well, they didn't even say anything to Mark Webber, as far as the information I have is that they essentially put that Sprecher front wing on Sebastian Vettel's car and didn't talk any more about it, and that completely sort of split the team. So I don't know, I think it really hurt. I think it really hurt Mark Webber. It caused a lot of friction unnecessarily, and I think that caused issues. I think Mark Webber was maybe a faster driver than maybe Logan Sargeant is in the sort of calibre of it, but it's not the point. It's how you want to treat people, and I think that this reveals something about how Williams are willing to treat their drivers and how the organisation is. I'm not sure I like the look of it. I don't want to read too much in an armchair psychologist, but yeah, the one thing it strikes me of is very ruthless, overly ruthless, to be honest. But then again, this is a cost cap era, it's a cost cap era, and you've, in some ways, there's even more incentive prior to the days, sort of post the days of the £400 million a year spends by teams. So yeah, it's up to the teams to use their assets as however they see fit as most effectively.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll move on from Williams for now, at the very least, and on to Alpine, who had a horrendous Australian Grand Prix last season, and they do continue their pointless start to 2024, with Pierre Gasly finishing P13 with a 5-second penalty for crossing the white line on the pit lane exit, and Esteban Ocon the last of the finishing drivers. Was there anything that the Alpines could have done to take advantage of the DNFs today? Or is it still just damage mitigation to try to come to the next race weekend with a resemblance of a competitive car?
I think they have taken advantage of the DNFs, to be honest with you. Looking at, there's three DNFs in Russell, Hamilton and Verstappen. Gasly has finished 13th from a starting position of 17th, so he's gained one place, net one place over the course of the race. And Ocon, on the other hand, has started in 15th and ended in 16th. And, he could have got caught out by various different things and other people have had, better races. But Joe and Bottas had, Joe started from the back of the grid and has finished ahead of him. And Gasly, I think, is lucky to... I don't know... I haven't looked through the list of penalties that you can... Sorry, I haven't looked through the penalties that people have got more in more recent times for crossing the pit lane exit, but that's a massive danger issue, particularly at Australia. It's not like it feeds in off the track and then you join at a later point. You join basically like at the point where you're going to be turning in for turn one. When that was brought in as a drive-through penalty, and I still think it should be. I think it's very, very lenient to give a 5-second penalty, and I do have a bit of an issue with the FIA for that, because I know F1 has changed in the last 20 years, but on the other hand, that was a drive-through penalty up until the early 2000s, but okay, that's what they decided to penalise it at. Either way, it's not made a massive amount of difference, because as you say, they're still three positions off the points and had a horrendous race. So, Yeah, I don't think it is a great performance out of Alpine. I don't think they've taken advantage of some of the chaos of the situation that existed very well at all, really. I think that's all they can hope for. Yeah, no, I think it's another in a long list of poor results, unfortunately.
It is very hard to see this as the same team who have won multiple championships and multiple constructors. Granted, you know, at this point now, nearly two decades ago, being their last one. But, you know, you just look at them and it's like, have you shown up to a race weekend before? You know, even like maybe 2 years ago, would have been prime opportunity for the Alpines to, you know, snatch a decent result from a race weekend like this one. But ultimately, you know, they've been let down by the fact that they just haven't got the car to take that challenge. To even in this case, you know, the Haas's and the one Williams car. But it also doesn't help when, you know, you're self-inflicting penalties by driving in ways that you should not and have already been penalised for, even if on a reprimand this specific race weekend. But we'll move on to the final team of the show. Owain, last but not least, we've got the Saubers, who spent as much time in the pits as they did on track. Valtteri Bottas once again making an attempt for the record for the longest pit stop, coming home in P14 ahead of his teammate Zhou Guanyu in P15. Kicking the can further down the road, Sauber's best highlight of the race weekend being a quick pit stop of 3.5 seconds. Anything to add on the Saubers?
I didn't realise it was that difficult to design wheel nuts. I think they might also be under investigation for a pit, not a pit lane violation, but for a wheel nut that weighed it into the first lane of the pit lane. And gosh, you know, it doesn't rain, it pours in some ways for them. Yeah. How hard is it to design a wheel nut? I mean, Audi owners, let us know. Yeah, no, it's been a really poor weekend for them. Yeah, I think Bottas. Hold on, I've just thought Bottas is now It was the longest pit stop in F1 history at
Monaco
years ago now, when he was at Mercedes, and then it was one day and 24 hours and like 20 seconds or something. I think Grofty said during the race for the next one, and then, you know, this time it was a good 30 or 40 seconds. So I don't know what they've
done. I think he's got one in the 50s as well. Which, it's a bit like Max Verstappen's consecutive race win record, in a sense. It's just going to be Max Verstappen holds the number one record, number two record, and number three record for, like, race wins in a row, but...
Yeah, it's as long as pit stops. Due to, ironically, is it Bottas? Is it Bottas?
Maybe it's Bottas.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, he needs to be having a look at his wheel rims and wheel nuts and stuff like that. To round off the rest of the grid, round off the rest of the field, George Russell not quite making it to the line, but classifying P17 after his, you know, final lap spin and ultimately capsizing. Lewis Hamilton DNFing with a suspected engine issue. Still not really sure about all the details on that, but it did look like it basically just shut off. And of course, to the sound of millions of cheering F1 fans, she says, you know, slightly tongue-in-cheek, but knows that there will be some out there who absolutely erupted. Max Verstappen finishing with a brake issue, not making it in more than a handful of laps, if many at all. Do you think F1 needed this? Because Crofty said that that's the case.
I wouldn't agree with that way of putting it. I think it made it more interesting. You know, I don't know. But I don't want to celebrate someone else's misfortune, to be honest with you. There's undoubtedly it led to a more interesting race. You know, and I thought, you know, you know what, it almost feels worth it for getting up at 4 a.m. to be honest. But there were a lot of people. I don't know, my phone was going off with people celebrating the fact that Max Verstappen's brakes stuck on. Just Red Bull, if you want just a tip, Toyota, I know from like 2017 at Le Mans, they had some brakes that were sticking on. with a hybrid unit attached. So it's like this fairly applicable technology. And they made it like a good 20 or 30 laps of Le Mans before they had to come in and change the entire thing because of a brake fire. So just hit them up. I'm sure they're giving you the technology.
I mean, they're not using it for their own F1 cars anymore.
No, which is weird because they've now got a development driver in Miata over in an F2, which is a bit weird. It's weird seeing Toyota Gazoo Racing on the side of an F2 car. But back to the point at hand. Sorry, but I had to get the beard. Yeah, no, I think it's... I don't want to celebrate someone else's misfortune or anything like that, but it certainly led to a more interesting race, and I don't, you know, make any point about that. But I think it's one thing that's not important, but I think it's good to see, and I know maybe people aren't going to necessarily agree with this, but Verstappen was very, very annoyed that, you know, that had happened to him. The guy is still driven. After three world championships, two where he's dominated the way, and that doesn't seem to be waning. So clearly he's still enjoying it. I mean, you know, he's in a class of one, but, you know, I do think he maybe would have run away with it because of that. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I'm glad to see it, but I'm not glad to see it. Like, I don't know how to resolve that in my head.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, you know, it's finished a 43 race finishing streak and would have potentially been his 11th win in succession. But, you know...
Maybe the limit is 10.
Maybe the limit is 10. You know, it's caused a soft reset for F1. And, you know, I'm sure we will see in Japan, you know, Max Verstappen bouncing back and putting right the wrongs of Australia. So Grid Talk's driver of the day was Carlos Sainz, obviously getting off to a great start and, you know, taking the early lead and then just leading from the front. He was managing his own strategy and did everything right. Owen, are you in agreement? Do you have another driver of the day?
No, I can't really put forward anyone else who I'd give it to over Sainz. I think he did a bang up job. You know, he's one race off. Like he's coming back from fairly invasive surgery, and I know that obviously these are the fit, you know, some of the fittest sportsmen in the world, but that's still an invasive surgical procedure. You know, he was in the car, like he was out of the car. Sorry, what was it, a week ago? Yeah, I think he's done a great job. You know, even though he's brought the car up, his fellow Spaniard Alonso, even though he's brought the car up a fair amount, I don't think he deserves it based on seeing the data. I think going onto the throttle again. Sorry, I had to bring it up because I hadn't seen the data at that point. But having had a quick glance at it, I think going onto the throttle is pretty egregious in my opinion. So I think that claim does hold water. That is dangerous driving. So yeah. Science for driver of the day, and Alonso definitely not.
Definitely. So at this point now, we'll give an opportunity to, you know, give a bit of a plug. I'll start off with a plug for Monkey Seat, since Tom is no longer here to do it for himself. So Monkey Seat, the sister show, sort of like the older cousin for Grid Talk. You know, it's a bit more sweary, it's a bit more rambunctious, but, you know, it's still a good time. But yeah, give Monkey Seat Pod, I believe, on all the socials a follow to get more information about. And Owen, where can people find Grid Talk if they want it?
I mean, should you want to hear the very good social posts that we put out, you can go to Grid Talk UK on all of the social medias with an @ to find all of the news about Grid Talk and when we go live in the future.
Yes, and if you want to find more from me, I am @ Ruby Price or Rubes001 on the socials. If you want to hear me complaining about whatever's going on this week, or if you want to get my varied reactions to a Coventry game, you know, it's always possible. You know, I don't know why that was the relevance here. But on that note, Grid Talk is available on YouTube, where most episodes are recorded live, as well as Amazon Fire, Spotify, Google Podcast, Apple Music, Verbal, and Pocket Casts. Just search Formula One Grid Talk for our huge back catalog of shows with previews and reactions to qualifying and the race results. And please consider supporting the channel on Patreon so we can get mics, lights, and better recording equipment. And also make sure you subscribe to the first to know when each new weekly episode is released. We'll be back soon with plenty more F1 content. Thank you very much for listening to the Grid Talk podcast presented by Bet Online, and goodbye.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.